We present Teddy Johnson as Steve Gardner in The Wolf Far Hence, a serial thriller in six parts by Edward Boyd. Part six, the finale.
Consider the face of murder, or even if it has a face. There have been theories, of course, about the shapes of ears, or one side of the face being slightly different from the other. Only theories. The face of murder has kind eyes. A little man who loves animals, plays the violin badly and is just a tiny bit too quick with a strychnine bottle. A woman with a gentle mouth, who cries over a bad sonnet, is shattered by a dead robin, goes berserk with an axe. Both faces of murder. Within a single year, in a quiet district, beside a quiet loch, four people, dead. A tinker and his wife, a playboy, a retired professional man, and it looked as though for them, the face of murder had protuberant eyes, a moustache as carefully tended as a lawn, tight, curly hair, and was recognizable as Captain Siegfried Bevis. I followed Bevis into the house. He led me along a narrow corridor that smelled of wet dogs and gun oil. The corridor was vaguely lit, and his shadow scuttled ahead of him, like a monstrous, crooked spider. I didn't look at my own, for good and sufficient reasons. There was just the chance that it might have resembled a fly.
Come into my den.
A very apt term.
I'm afraid the fire seems to have gone out.
It doesn't matter.
I could offer you a drink.
No, thank you.
Let's get down to brass tacks, Gardner.
You know something?
Tell me.
I have the strangest feeling that you've rehearsed this scene before.
They say there's nothing new under the sun.
Who played my part then?
I can't really answer that until I know exactly what your part is.
Quite.
All right, then. What is your part, as you call it?
I don't really know.
Then I'm afraid I shall have to throw you out.
I can't see you doing that.
It would be no trouble at all. I'm fit and strong.
I know. I'm a great athlete. Decathlon champion. Olympic gold medal and all that. I'm quite sure you could easily throw me all the way from here back to the hotel. I'm equally sure you won't.
There is such a thing as overconfidence.
Oh, there is indeed. And you, Bevis, of more than your fair share of it.
That has never been one of my besetting sins, Gardner.
Oh, well, you probably had others to compensate.
What makes you say that?
Oh, things.
What things?
Dead people.
You mentioned Jonathan Ketch when you came here.
I believe I did.
How is he?
Dead. Remember?
Oh, I'm distressed to hear it. He was rather a decent little chap.
Yes, he was, and very interesting. Full of all sorts of fascinating lore about the local flora and fauna. I used to listen to him for hours.
Well, that aspect of him, I must say, I found rather tedious.
Oh, you're wrong. There was one particular story he told that I never tired of. It was about the night he wandered up in this direction in search of badgers.
Did he find any?
He found something much more interesting. A man.
How very disappointing for him.
Not at all. This man was something special. To begin with, he was naked.
Good Lord. Whatever for?
Murder. Undressed to kill, you might say.
Oh, you have a neat turn of phrase sometimes.
Thank you.
A gift that very often goes with an overheated imagination.
Some of my best friends complain that I've no imagination at all.
Naked men.
Singular, one. A very specific naked man. And blacked all over from head to foot. An extension of the old commando practice, perhaps?
You're telling the story.
In that case, I'll come to the most intriguing thing of all. The man had a broken ankle.
Nonsense. How could he have swum with a broken ankle?
Nobody mentioned swimming.
Let's drop this cat-and-mouse game, shall we?
As you wish.
I take it that this mysterious black man you mention is alleged to be me.
I like that word, alleged.
And the insinuation is that I killed Willie John McCree, the tinker.
No insinuation, Bevis. An accusation.
An extremely serious one.
It must have been a shock to you when you bumped into Elspeth MacDonald and her boyfriend on your way down to the lock.
Really, Gardner, why in heaven's name should I kill a tinker?
Oh, you mustn't be snobbish,
Bevis. That's not answering the question.
All right, then. You killed the tinker because he was a witness to your father's will, the one that you suppressed.
So I lured him to the island, swam out there, and butchered him.
That's exactly what you did.
I may be being stupid, Gardner, but I still don't get the point of being naked.
There is a point. I think this had to be a particularly brutal killing.
Why?
To encourage the others.
What others?
Calder, for one.
I see.
You couldn't risk wearing trunks, hence the nudity. Any blood you picked up would be washed away during the return journey.
What a cold-hearted swine you must think I am.
No.
Yes, you must be consistent, you know.
I'm being quite consistent. I think Ketch was right about you that night at Craig's Point. I think you're insane.
Insane?
You were incredibly lucky the first time. I think you were prepared a clumsy sort of alibi. The day before the murder, you were hobbling about on a stick, pretending you had injured your ankle.
What?
You told me so yourself.
I told you I was pretending.
I'm telling you now you
were. You're telling me lots of things, aren't you, Gardner?
Nothing you don't know. After you killed the tinker, you swam back to the shore. It's a pretty rocky coast along this way, and as you were coming out of the water, you slipped and really did break your ankle. That looked like the end. And then Ketch came along and found you. He was a funny little man with highly subjective views on crime and punishment. He helped you back to the house. And when he heard about the murder, he said nothing.
Isn't this a lovely house I have? You did say you liked it, didn't you?
The business about the telephone was the only time you showed even a spark of intelligence. You used it to link up your phony sprained ankle with your genuine broken one. You had been phoning and phoning the doctor, but the telephone was out of order. That was the story, and it was good. It made everyone think that your ankle had been broken all the time, and that eliminated you as a suspect.
Why do you have to bring up all these unpleasant things, Gardner?
I'm sorry if I'm boring you.
Oh, good Lord, no. I'm never bored. Never.
That I can believe.
Did I show you a photograph of my father?
I've seen his portrait in the other room.
His portrait? Idealized trash. Gives you no idea of what it was really like. This photograph. You'll understand everything. It's one of those old-fashioned tin-type things. Where did I put it now? Had it somewhere the other day.
Look, Bevis.
Now, where did I last see it? Let me think. The greenhouse. Yes, I was shooting darts into it from an air gun the other day. Oh, no. It couldn't have been, because when I was shooting darts into it, I was wearing short trousers, holiday from school. And my father came in. He thrashed me within an inch of my life.
I can see the photograph some other time.
Yes, yes, of course. I'll send it along to you. Then you'll understand. You'll understand everything.
I think I understand some of it right now.
Yes, I think you do. You're gentle now. You weren't gentle before, but you are now to know all this, to forgive all. That's true, isn't it?
Yes.
My father could never appreciate that. Must find that photograph for you. It would be self-explanatory. He had very cold blue eyes and a beard that seemed to be made out of metal shavings. He had principles. I hate people with principles.
I'm a bit suspicious of them myself.
I knew you would be. I am glad I changed my mind about you.
So am I.
When you came in the door, I thought, oh no, not another one. First Willie John McPhee, then Calder, then Ketch, then Mrs. McPhee, and now this fellow.
You killed them all, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I had to, you see. I would have been very sorry about killing you.
Why?
Well, you see, I rather warmed to you that day when you came to see Elspeth MacDonald. You admired the house, and I could sense that you were genuine.
I am. I think it's a beautiful house.
It is, isn't it? It's the only thing I ever really loved in my life. Except Mother, of course. She was as beautiful as the house, and as unhappy as I was. We were both really only happy here. My father, too busy making money, hardly came here at all until after he retired. So you see, this house was more than a house. It was a sanctuary. I used to sail up the loch on my way home after school broke up for the holidays. The steamer slapping its way through the islands, the sunlight dancing on the water, then my mother standing on the pier, waving to me, laughing. You can understand why I never married, can't you?
Yes.
That reminds me of that girl.
The police think she killed Calder.
Oh, but that's absurd. Oh, we simply can't have that. Tell you what, I'll have a word with the police and fix all that up. I mean, what's the use of being lord of the manor if you can't use your influence on behalf of a friend?
You'll tell the police you killed him?
Oh, yes.
You had a key to the hotel back door.
Yes, I had.
Calder was trying to take the house away from you.
That's what it would have meant eventually. He had stolen the will my father made.
And you'd been paying him ever since?
Yes. It was always difficult. Then it became impossible. So he ordered me to sell the house.
That was the night you were in the hotel with your estate workers.
Yes. I slipped out. Went around the side of the hotel and let myself in through the back door. I went up to Calder's room and listened to his monstrous proposal. When I protested, he laughed. Then I saw this long nail file lying on a table.
I know the rest.
Someone nearly caught me as I was going back out. I didn't have time to lock the door again.
Miss Clark found it open.
Oh, I'm sure she did. It was some time before I managed to get round to lock it again.
Very neat.
Isn't it strange how people envy me this house?
It's understandable.
I suppose so. First my father, then the two Tinkers, and Calder, and Ketch. They all wanted to take it from me. I say, do you think it's possible to love something too much?
I think it's dangerous to put all your eggs in one basket.
Oh, that may be true about people. But people are different from houses. People are expendable.
You've just summed up thousands of years of civilization.
Calder used to talk like that. He could be quite amusing. He seemed fond of the house, too. I thought at first that he was sympathetic. I say, let me get you a drink.
No, I'd rather not.
But I insist. I feel that I'm neglecting my duties as host.
No, you're not.
Or you'll make me feel much better if you accept.
All right, then.
A drop of that malt you admired. I'll be back in a moment. Soda or plain water?
Water, please.
Well, here I am back again.
Put that gun away, Bevis.
Just like the others, aren't you?
Put that gun away.
You're particularly like Calder. You pretend to like the house and you know too much.
I'm not like Calder, but I don't want to discuss anything at gunpoint.
I'll put the gun away, cleaned and oiled when I've finished with it, and you.
You're mad.
You really think so?
Yes.
In that case, all your sympathy has just been so much hypocrisy. I can't stand that sort of thing. Can't stand it. Oh, I'm glad I found out about you in time.
You're a sick man, Bevis.
It's the world that's sick. It's a sick world that forces me to do all this killing. I hate violence. I hate it. But what other option have I got?
Listen to me.
You've talked enough.
Yes, perhaps I have.
I'm sorry about this, but...
You don't really care about this house, do you, Bevis?
I care about it enough to have done all the things I've done.
But you've never actually killed anyone in this house, have you?
Never.
You can't kill me in here.
Why not?
Because if you do, you're profaning your own shrine. You're tarnishing forever the one thing that really has any meaning for you.
Yes. Yes. I hadn't thought of that. We'll go outside.
Once again, the narrow corridor. This time, my shadow leading. Dancing. Trembling. Does a man's shadow become different when he walks to the gallows? To the execution block? I can't remember. Outside, the drenching moonlight. A world of black and white. Its values unequivocal. Dark absolutes. The moon, full and bright and conquered. A fox barked, like someone clearing his throat. Behind me, Bevis moved noiselessly.
This will do.
Here.
You've had it, Bevis. Why don't you realize it?
Are you ready?
As ready as I'll ever be.
I'll count to three. One. Two. Three.
There's blood. All over my hand.
Oh! Rope! Back into McCallum! Get after him!
Be a fool, Bevis! See where you are, come on!
That was pretty fancy shooting, Gordon.
Oh, you and your foolish heroics.
I know, I know. I didn't realize just how mad he was.
Oh, well, it's all over now anyway. He won't get far.
But Bevis did get far. Far enough to lose them in a landscape he knew better than the policemen, gamekeepers, foresters who had been born and brought up in the countryside and boasted acquaintanceship with every blade of grass and sprig of heather. Ideal guerrilla country. And Bevis was the ideal guerrilla. 3 days later, in bright sunshine, soon it would be time to burn the heather to allow the new growth through. And high on the hill, a menacing line of men, moving across diagonally, beating the biggest game of all, a human being. In the sky, sounding a new dimension to the search, a helicopter.
You think they'll find him?
They're wasting their time.
You mean he's got away?
He doesn't want to get away.
You sound as though you know where he is.
I don't know where he is, but I know where he wants to be.
Weird machines, these choppers.
Yes.
They manage to look prehistoric and modern at the same time. Hello, someone's in a hurry.
It's your flatmate and my old enemy, Celia.
The local police have gone out of their tiny official minds.
Somebody told them you were coming.
Roadblocks all the way up. Are you all right, Judy?
I'll tell you about it later.
Well, Mr. Gardner,
I told you to take care of Calder. Looks like you've done just that.
I was too far behind in the queue.
Where is he?
You probably passed him on the way up.
All right. I'll buy it. Where is he?
Balaroc, the police mortuary.
Is this true, Judy?
Yes. They're looking for the man who did it.
That explains the roadblocks.
Yes. I just lost a bet with myself.
What was the bet?
That if Calder ever got chopped, it would be by a woman.
Oh, the police had that bet with themselves for a little while.
Well, who did they favor?
Me.
For heaven's sake, Judy. Well, why didn't you let me know? Why didn't you phone?
The phone down here is peculiar. If it works 3 days in a row, they have a firework display and the fountains run wine.
Steve took care of everything.
Well, that was the brief you gave me, wasn't it, Celia?
I know you mean well, Celia, but sometimes I wish you'd let me live my own life.
Oh, I do. And most of the time you're perfectly capable. But you're such a fool about men.
You're overprotective.
No, just beady-eyed. I drove down here to see if you were all right, Judy.
And am I?
I think you should come back home with me right now.
Now, wait a minute, Celia.
I think that's good advice.
Well, I'd feel I was running away.
From what?
That's what I call a very good question.
Look, I think you've had enough of Loch Derrick. Enough to last you any ordinary lifetime.
Oh, I don't think I ever want to see this place again.
Then start not seeing it as of now, darling. Pay your bill, pack your bags, and I'll have you back in the swinging city in no time.
What about you, Steve?
I'll hang on here a little longer.
But I will see you again.
You'll see me again.
All right.
I'll go and pack. Would you like an unsolicited testimonial?
If you've got one to spare.
You're much cleverer than Calder.
Well, to put it another way, I'm a better con man.
I find you very easy to talk to.
If what we're doing is talking.
You're not going to see her again, of course.
Did anyone ever spit in your carefully made-up eye?
Not to date.
Well, remember this, my cold, insolent unfriend. There's got to be a first time for everything.
You bore me, Fortune Hunter.
She went off into the hotel, a tall, dark, good-looking lady, whose mind was in a state of rigor mortis. And what had caused that was money in the bank for some happy psychiatrist with a new couch and an old finance company. I wandered down to the shore. A boat was drifting serenely a few yards out. It had a crew of policemen.
Any luck?
No yet.
No trace of him at all?
I found some blood stains further down the loch this morning.
He's hurt, then?
Aye, sure. His heart burned.
When I got back to the hotel, Judy was coming out, and I helped her put her suitcases in the car.
Come and see me in Glasgow.
If you'll clear the appointment with Celia.
Oh, I think Celia and I are going to have what you might call a confrontation.
Well, wait until you get home. If you spring it at her suddenly, well, she might wreck the car.
Oh, I shouldn't think so. It's the only thing she cares about.
I feel as though I'm breaking up a beautiful friendship.
Which would have happened eventually in any case.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am. I've been feeling restless for some time back. I don't want to stay up here any longer. All the things that have happened, my uncle's death, Calder, even Celia. Well, I know it's wrong to blame a place for the events that happened to you in that place, but...
Where will you go?
I've always had a secret notion for a house in the Thames, with a lawn that runs down to the river.
Well, the great thing about being rich is that you can make secret notions like that into realities.
Do you resent my having money?
No, no. Other people's money never bothers me, only my own, or the lack of it.
Let me do what I want to do. Then, when the smoke's cleared, we'll get together and see what happens.
Well, you know where to find me. And this time, I'll be taking incoming calls.
Thank you for everything.
My pleasure.
Here comes Celia.
And here came Celia, and got into the car without speaking. And Judy waved, and the car snarled and shut away. And I went back into the hotel lounge, where a transistor set was telling me things I knew already.
Still no trace of the man the police wish to interview in connection with a series of murders on Loch Darrigside. The search is now in its fourth day, and this evening a police spokesman said...
That police spokesman was me, and I have no wish to hear what I said.
Stage fright?
Oh, always sounds so pompous.
Had you anything to be pompous about?
Not when I spoke to them.
Anything since?
Well, we found Ketch.
Well, that doesn't help much.
Not one iota.
Permission to speak?
Go ahead.
Call the search off.
What did you say?
Call the search off.
And just forget that the whole thing happened.
He wants to come back to the house. I'm convinced of that. But he's not going to try it while your men are swarming around everywhere. Call your men off, and you and I will keep vigil in the house.
And if he doesn't come?
It's a calculated risk.
All right.
He didn't come the first night, and we sat through the chill hours listening to the sounds of darkness, investing them with nervous meanings, wrapped in our mutual tension, willing the man out there to creep into the house and end it, to bring peace to us and to himself. He did not come.
I have a sinking suspicion, Gardner, that you and I are making fools of ourselves.
No, he's hurt, and he's not thinking too well, but he'll come. And the second night, he came, blunderingly, softly. He was moaning and you could almost smell the pain. He's gone into the bedroom next door.
Well, come on. Switch on the light.
Okay.
Father, I'm sorry. Wicked. I'll pray tonight. Forgive us. Oh,
we've come to help you, Bevis.
Who is it?
Inspector Gordon.
Sir, someone with you?
Steve Gardner.
Apologies.
No, we'll get you a doctor.
Waste of time. Gardner.
I'm still here.
You knew
that you'd come back to the house? Yes.
I can't see anymore.
Wish, now don't try to talk.
Must. Luxury. Won't be able. Afford. Much longer. I had to die. In the house. Loved.
Captain Siegfried Bevis. He died hard.
We went back to the hotel, and I thought we should have set the house on fire and watched the flames roar up, and inside a sad, dead man going out like a Viking. And Gordon walked beside me, holding his thoughts, and dawn flicked across the sky like a silver whip. In the bedroom, lying on the hard bed, listening to a room filled with voices.
I say, do you think it's possible to love something too much?
That's what I call a very good question. But I will see you again. That's what I call a very good question.
You can understand why I never married, can't you?
That's what I call a very good question.
There were too many of them, far too many, very good questions. But fewer, and further between, very good answers. And in the end, I turned my face from the invading dawn and slept.
In The Wolf Far Hence by Edward Boyd, the parts were played as follows. Steve Gardner, Teddy Johnson. Captain Siegfried Bevis, Robert Urquhart. Detective Inspector Gordon, Moultrie Kelso. Judy Clark, Janet Michael. Celia Carson, June Andrews. Radio newsreader, David Findlay. The Wolf Far Hence was produced in our Glasgow studios by Eddie Fraser.